Better Call Paul is a production of Lola Media. Say hi, Lola.
Hey, everyone. This is Paul Sarker from Better Call Paul. Just wanted to remind you that the show is intended for entertainment purposes only and is not legal advice. I am not your lawyer unless we separately agree for me to represent you, and the views expressed by Mesh and me are solely our own. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Better Call Paul, the show where we discuss the legal and business side behind the scenes of Hollywood sports and entertainment. I'm your co-host, Paul Sarker, former Marvel lawyer and current Big Law Media attorney.
And I'm your other co-host, Mesh Lakhani. Welcome back to the show, folks. Paul, we got a good one this week. A lot of lawsuits, a lot of trial stuff. Excited to get into it.
Yeah, we do have a good one. Honestly, like, our two main topics, I would put them in the category of like negative bad news or bad things happening. But it is Easter, and Holy was just last week, so I do want to talk about some positive things, but most of the episode, sure, it's going to be juicy and salacious, but this is like a little bit of a balance. So last week was Holy, which is a popular Hindu festival of celebrating colors, love, spring, the triumph of good over evil. If you're not familiar with it and you happen to see a bunch of South Asian people with like colorful paint in their hair and on their clothes, they probably were coming from like a holy party or a holy festival.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I think it's great. It's a lot of fun. The paint does wash off. It's like a powder. And so it was last week, but we didn't discuss it. I just wanted to celebrate that because we're also mentioning Easter. So I went to Catholic high school. So Easter, it's like a big holiday and everything's closed today, which is, you know, if you're not celebrating, you're at least impacted by
sure.
it. But it's like a nice day to gather with family and, you know, have a big meal and celebrate the resurrection of Christ, if that's your thing. If it's not, then it's just a day when everything's closed. The other thing, and if you could see the video, it's March Madness. Duke is still in the tournament.
That's right.
As of today, that's as right. of this recording.
So you guys are in the,
Duke's
wait,
in the Elite
you,
Eight.
Elite Eight, right. As of this recording.
Yeah, so today, as of this recording, they could make it to the Final Four. They have to beat NC State, which if you asked me a month ago, hey, if you have to just beat NC State to make it to the Final Four, I would have taken that. But NC State's on an incredible run. They're shaping up to look like a team of destiny. They won 5 games in a row to win the ACC tournament where they beat Duke or in Duke's opening round. And, you know, they're in the Elite Eight too. So anything could happen. But, you know, UVA, not to throw
Dude,
shade,
we got out,
but
what,
that's
first
alma
week,
mater.
You're out. See ya.
They got bounced in the play-in, yeah.
So we didn't even, it wasn't even
embarrassing.
We lost by like 30 points or something.
So they were in the 68.
Okay.
So they were in the play-in.
Yeah.
So they technically did make the dance. And, you know, they won a championship not that long ago. What was it, 2019?
Yeah, I have the hat. A friend of mine gave it to me. It's funny when it's funny to wear those hats out because it's like it's been a while now and you're kind of holding on to it and you get
it hasn't been that long.
You get knocked out of you don't yeah. So I'm just kind of
I have the Duke 2015 hat, the gold one, right?
Yeah. I'm just now this is where I start watching. I missed a lot of games, but I really do like what I love about March Madness. I just love that there's so much on the line for these kids, like everyone, you know, the spirit of the schools. Like this is where I think tournaments are a lot of fun. People aren't getting paid millions and millions of dollars. Like there's more on the line.
Well, they're getting paid through NIL, but that's
yeah. Well, you know what I mean. Like some of these teams are like, this is the last time they might play basketball if they're a senior, like in front of big crowds.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. A lot of them are not going to play professionally. Some of them are, and the teams that are in the Final Four usually have a couple lottery caliber or first round caliber players. But and we'll talk about it. It's like a lot of blue bloods. UConn is looking like an unstoppable force. They have their center is going to be a lottery pick. Duke always has players that get drafted. And so the thing I wanted to mention about UVA is, so they won in 2019 and now they got bounced. They didn't make the tournament last year. Then this year they went like in their game, they went like almost an hour in real time without scoring. So it's like pretty crazy.
That's crazy.
But the ACC overall has done very well.
That's crazy. Yeah. I didn't end up watching the game, but I just saw the end score and I was like, what the heck?
Yeah, it was almost like an hour.
That's for a basketball game? That's pretty insane.
Yeah. I mean, I think it included halftime, but it's still like to go an hour, almost an hour is, I can't imagine. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah.
Well, and then final.
Kick us just, when you're down.
Well, hey, former champions. They still have a championship-winning coach. There's not that many out there. UConn might repeat this year. And final banter's topic this week, Mesh, you're a big theater guy, theatrical movie, that is. And I am less so, but I definitely, you know, when I had the time, Barbenheimer and other things, like, it's a good escape,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. I mean, I recently went and saw Dune 2 in theaters, and I absolutely loved it. I went to an AMC with the recliners. I thought Dune.
Now, with the previews and the Nicole Kidman thing, how long is that?
Well, so funny. They shortened the Nicole Kidman thing to all the things that they, you know, because she gets made fun of for that commercial. So they shortened it to get rid of all the things that she gets made fun of for the commercial. But so it's funny that you mentioned that because they did shorten it. You're in there for 3 hours and change, just because the movie's 2 hours and four. I think 2 hours and 40 minutes, and then previews are anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes.
And there's like a half-hour preview.
Yeah, and so, but I'll tell you this, man. That movie was, I absolutely loved it. I thought it was a great time, great movie to watch in cinemas. The special effects are incredible. The sound. I thought the acting was great. I won't, no spoilers. I won't say anything. I did actually think that Austin Butler stole the show, but which I didn't think I'd ever say.
I mean, he was great in Elvis.
Great Elvis, but it comes down to the same problem we keep talking about. People are not going to the movies, or at least the movies had a really tough Q1, and so much so that, you know, companies like AMC have been feeling it. There's rumors now.
They're doing another capital raise. Yeah.
Another capital raise because they didn't have great numbers in Q1. And this is becoming like, you know, look, there was a strike. There's less movies. People aren't going to the movies. Like, this is just going to be a back and forth. I don't see this changing anytime soon.
No, the business is fundamentally, it's fundamentally challenged. And it may not even be a function of the type of movies that are being released. That may be a part of it, but it's also just like, you know, if you can have an 85-inch TV in your house or whatever, or 75, what, like, you can have like super high quality sound, a big screen, you know, the comfort of your own home. Like, people can do that now in a way that they really couldn't 10, 15 years ago. So the home theater has become higher quality, more accessible. And it's just a lot of work to like go to the theater. A lot of theater chains are not investing in the space. They're kind of messy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, but, you know, Alamo Drafthouse, the reason we're talking about it, so that was a different approach. That was like trying to make going to the movies a higher-end, upscale
experience
event. You know, you can full bar, you can get dinner, you can hang out, shop there, get some memorabilia. But they're looking to sell. I mean, they went bankrupt.
After COVID.
Right, yeah. During the pandemic. So they've emerge from bankruptcy, but they're, it looks like they're trying to just get out of this business.
Look, the way I look at it, because Alamo, you walk in, you know, to your side, there's a bar, there's a gift shop, you go and sit down, you can order drinks, you can order food. Now, here's my, we have an Alamo Draft House in downtown Brooklyn, not too far from where we are. It is not my number one choice to go watch a movie. I do enjoy it, but I make the bet that that's for people who like don't mind going to the movies, but they're going to like, yeah, let's go and enjoy the Alamo because we could. It's really distracting when someone's coming up to you and like asking for your order, and then there's food and all sorts of stuff happening. I think for real moviegoers who are going to the theater to watch a movie, like, I don't know if Alamo, it's also a higher ticket item. You're going to end up spending more money. It's a really hard bet for me to like that Alamo's where people would want to go. And I think the other thing about going to the movies, you said earlier, not only do you have the home theater at home, but it's the times. You have to really work within other people's like time slots. So if you don't get, you know, right. And then if it's sold out, you get away, then you're just getting frustrated. But to your point, Alamo has 41 locations across 13 states. You know, I think they did $134 million in 2023 box office, which was up from 25% the year before. Again, I don't know if that's a really good number to judge it off of, but yeah, man, it's a tough business. I mean, restaurants are also struggling. So now you have a restaurant in a movie theater that's also struggling. You know what I mean? So what are you going to do?
The overhead is way higher because you have servers, you have staff, you have more cleaning that you have to do. And it's like two businesses that are struggling. So certain restaurants are doing very well.
Yes.
Like QSRs, like the Chipotles, the Cavas of the world. And high end seems to be doing okay, at least in New York.
Yes.
But the middle tier is really struggling because it's not an event and the bill's still pretty high because their costs are high. So that's a tough business. Theatrical movies are a tough business. And Alamo's kind of like both of those, right? So I guess you could say, you know, coming off of a year where their profit was significantly higher than the year before, maybe it's a good time to try to transact it if you're like, hey, you know, we're on a, you know, melting glacier here.
Yeah, and there's just not enough movies to get you to go to the theater, let alone get you to go and eat in a theater, you know? So it's like when you're thinking about your night out, would you rather eat at a restaurant and get a better quality, or would you rather go watch like a mediocre movie and then eat, you know, like nachos and wings and stuff? So I think it's an interesting, like when you...
Or so some people would do both, right? Yeah. Like the dinner and the movie thing, I guess, is like, it's too much time.
Though. It's a lot of time. Like, well, especially when these movies are like 3 hours long.
Yeah, just sit down dinner. No, like maybe you grab like, you know, a burrito bowl or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
Tough to do both.
It's tough to do both. So, you know, as much as I'd want to see the theaters come back, like if there's no movies to go watch in the theaters, like I'm just not going. Like Dune 2, sure. But like that, there was a Godzilla Kong movie that I barely even realized was out. Like, do I want to go to the theater for that? You know, like that thing just came out of nowhere. And then there's a Liam Neeson movie that came out that's like 82% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I'm like, oh, great. I should watch that on streaming. It turns out that's only in the theater. So I'm like, maybe I'll go watch that. But
for now,
but it'll probably be on streaming relatively soon. So yeah, it'll be interesting.
Jeez, I don't know who are the 18% of people that don't like Liam Neeson movies, this movie in particular.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I like Liam Neeson.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
And then another, just a random recommendation from me. I know this is more your department, but Shogun.
Yeah, Hulu.
FX/Hulu is a good show.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen it.
I saw the first episode. It's big budget. It's violent. It's pretty cool. I started watching it along with The Gentleman, which is Guy Ritchie's Netflix movie, and then The Three-Body Problem, also on Netflix. So we've got a little surge of TV happening here. There's some good stuff to watch.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break and jump back in with another Diddy scandal. So Mesh, way back, actually not that far.
Yeah, it wasn't that
episode far. Episode 242. We talked about Cassie filing a pretty salacious lawsuit against Diddy, alleging a bunch of things like sex trafficking, sexual assault, false imprisonment, beating her up.
That was terrible. Jeez, yeah.
Yeah, the fact pattern was really bad, but she settled with him within 24 hours of filing her lawsuit. So it kind of got swept under the rug, so to speak. And, you know, Diddy makes it out unscathed. Maybe his public perception, you know, his public image took a little bit of a hit, but you know, nothing really changed his life. I mean, he made a settlement, but we don't know what that amount was, and he's still a billionaire.
Well, I was going to say, to your point about the public talking, more and more people started joking about Diddy having like these parties, and these parties had all sorts of stuff in it. And like, you had people like Usher being like, they asked Usher, would you ever let your kid hang out at Diddy's parties? And he was like, absolutely not. You have 50 Cent, been talking for years. So like, I think now more and more people are being like, yeah, you never want to hang out with Diddy, like without supervision. That's what you started seeing in terms of the commentary.
Right. So, I mean, I think maybe at one point 25 years ago, Diddy had like a clean image, but I think he's been associated with being a pretty terrible person for a long time. But he was always kind of like Teflon. And now you wonder, you know, he had powerful people in his back pocket. He paid the right people. He had some people who had connections to law enforcement on his side. So he's managed to sort of escape unscathed with everything. There was a gun incident at a club in 2001 in New York where Shine did 10 years.
That's right.
And he and J-Lo were like involved in a shooting, but they both got off. I don't think they were even arrested. They might have been arrested, but not charged. And then a couple years later, there was a shooting in a recording studio in LA, Chalice Recording Studio, and I don't think he was charged. So he basically lived this lifestyle above the law. He's a billionaire. He has these mansions. And this week, there was at least a major story in that there's a federal a raid into his homes in Miami and Los Angeles, where Homeland Security Investigations claims that they are researching or trying to get information about sex trafficking allegations. Mm-hmm. So they're searching his homes. And this guy, Rodney Lilrod, filed a lawsuit against Sean Combs as well, alleging things like grooming, sexual assault. Yeah. And he was apparently Combs's videographer and a producer on some of the music. And he claims he was sexually assaulted repeatedly for like a year. All of this stuff, I mean, the sum basically like these allegations and what's being put out there is that Diddy is kind of like the Jeffrey Epstein of the music sports industry.
Exactly. Well, you got to imagine if federal agents and Homeland Security are going to execute search warrants for your properties and you're like freaking out and you're not there. As 50 Cent actually tweeted this.
He's not freaking out though. He's like chilling.
Well,
he's
maybe like he needs
smoking cigars, like eating, going to restaurants.
Well, didn't he like, didn't he go to the Bahamas? Like he wasn't in the country.
I think he's in Miami now.
Now he's in Miami. 50 Cent wrote a tweet because 50 Cent's got a big, you know, he's been after Diddy for a while, but 50 Cent wrote something about these guys don't come to your house with that many people if it's not serious. And it seems like the accusers and the lawsuits are piling up now. Like once it's been Pandora's box been open, it seems like it's a matter of time for this guy.
He doesn't seem concerned, but sure. I mean, like to come from relative obscurity, Clive Davis mentored him. He gets this label, Bad Boy. Bad Boy was instrumental. You know, they had a lot of great artists like Mace and Biggie and Black Rob and 112, Lil' Kim. So like Bad Boy became the face of East Coast rap in, you know, foil to Death Row Records with Suge Knight and Tupac and Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre. And so like, yes, he made a lot of money. You could say he made J-Lo's career when she transitioned from being an actress to a singer. And now she's like this, you know, big music star.
But it seems like since then, like there's a lot of people, he definitely made a lot of careers. But you don't really hear his name really associated with music now. It's like maybe he's put his right. money to work well. And obviously like things like Ciroc and stuff. But you don't really see, you know, it's like, what does Diddy do? Like, he's got some TV channel. Does anyone even watch it?
Revolt.
Yeah. Like, I've never seen anything on this channel. And like, part of you starts wondering, like, you're kind of like, okay, maybe, yeah, the Bad Boy thing, but has he made some good business deals? Like, is there something else this guy's actually up to that has gotten him a lot of it? I'm just making.
Well, allegedly running guns.
Exactly.
Drugs.
That's like
and
what it.
Sex trafficking ring.
Which to me, you know, I'm just making some assumptions. That makes sense to me from a standpoint of like, man, how did this guy, like, look, I get how wealthy he got, but then to the compound the wealth when you're not really like, Diddy's just kind of there now. Like, and people are like, yeah, he's not the nicest guy. People don't like him. He's rubbed people a lot of wrong ways in the music industry. Like, how is this guy still making a ton of money? Where is his money going? I read something where, you know, Combs had bragged that he paid a stipend to women, including 50 Cent's ex, Daphne Joy, for sexual services. 50 then called out, he shares custody with the child with Daphne Joy for called her out for being a sex worker. Now you have all these things coming out about.
Wouldn't he have known that?
That's what I thought, but you never know, man. You never know.
Yeah, it's sort of like Cable Guy. I don't know if you remember that scene where Matthew Broderick, like, you know, has this really successful date. He has a like party at his place and Jim Carrey the next morning is like, oh, next time you buy or something.
Yeah.
And he's like,
yeah.
Anyway, I think like to sum it up, because we really don't know. I mean, his lawyer stated a denial. He said, hey, this is all hit job. People looking for a quick payday. I didn't do any of these things that I'm accused of, which I guess he's allowed to say, right? His lawyer, Sean Hawley, she defends a lot of these types of people, like very wealthy people who just are on the wrong side of the law. And, you know, she said this guy, Lil Rod, is a liar. The overall image that's being created is that he is, you know, a gatekeeper. He has very powerful, influential friends who can make or break careers in music and entertainment. And they have these like crazy, wild, drug-fueled sex parties where a lot of illicit and homosexual behavior happens, and they record it all so that they have information and content to blackmail people into doing what they say.
Jeez, man. That's insane.
So there's like cameras all over these like multi-million dollar estates.
Right.
Where these parties take place. And I mean, he's sort of above the law, right? Like he just, and like people go there, maybe they're coerced into doing things that they don't want to do because they don't want to be on his bad side. And then he records it. And then he's like, boom, I got this over you now.
Yeah, but now that the public is aware of these things and more stuff is coming out, I've got to imagine like people are going to want to see this guy like behind bars.
They may. I mean, his image may have changed, but if he still has powerful friends, if he's made like, you know, many, many donations and curried favor with like influential politicians and DAs and police, we just don't know how deep this thing goes, right? Yeah. And so it's hard to say, and I'm hesitant to take a position because you just never know. But it does seem like there's this whole, and I don't know if, you know, people had speculated about this in the past, like, you know, making it in the business involves some sort of like black magic or like being on the right side of a few gatekeepers and having the right people in your corner. Cause you wonder, it's like, how can one person become a star when there's so many talented people out there who just can't get a break or can't go viral? And it's like, okay, maybe there is this underworld to it that, you know, Justin Bieber, you get selected, J-Lo, you get selected to be like a big star where other people who might be equally talented just don't. But I don't know. I mean, I like to think that things are fair and it's a meritocracy and the best people end up getting, you know, the best results, but maybe that's just not how it works.
We'll see. This one, you know, going to watch it carefully. So maybe in the next month or so, we'll get more news. What happens?
Sure. But that's certainly a different business and legal side behind the scenes than we were thinking about when we envisioned the show 2.5 years ago. Okay, well, let's take a quick break and jump into SBF, Sam Bankman-Fried, being sentenced.
Okay, so Paul, obviously, big, big news, SBF, the founder of FTX and, you know, one of the guys who ran Alameda Research. One of the biggest faces of crypto, young guy, believer of effective altruism. This kid who was part of one of the biggest scams in, at least in crypto, but let alone like, I think in tech. I mean, the whole war, it affected the entire
Madoff level. Yeah.
Yeah. Madoff level. It affected an entire industry, has been sentenced to 25 years in prison. Some say too little. I would say, yeah, 25 years is a long time. So I think the guy, it's going to suck for him. So, but, you know, a lot of people look at this like, should he gotten much longer than this? Why don't you explain the actual sentencing, and then I can give a bit of a background of how he got here.
So in November, he was convicted of 7 felony charges. And so let's rewind a little bit. Like in 2021, 2020, there's a crypto exchange called FTX that just breaks on the scene. Do they do endorsement deals with everyone, like Steph Curry, Larry David, that was in a Super Bowl ad, Giselle and Tom Brady. They have all these endorsers. They're paying hundreds of millions of dollars to celebrities, donating to Democratic politicians.
Yeah, they have $135 million naming rights for the Miami Heat, the stadium. The
Miami Heat Arena, right? So they're spending all this money. It's like a crypto exchange. They have their own currency. And all is going well. Sam Bankman-Fried is CEO of this company. And everyone's like, oh, he's like the person that's going to usher crypto into the new era, right? Like he's like making crypto cool, kind of a nerdy, autistic guy, math genius. His parents are law professors at Stanford Law, you know, very well-educated, very privileged kid. And so basically like he's like this golden child for crypto. And then in November 2022, it comes out that they're facing a liquidity crisis and they wanted Binance to buy them out. And the CZ, the head of Binance, was like, hey, we did some diligence. We're not touching this thing.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to withdraw their money.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I think, okay, let's take a step back because I think it you do need to understand that the background before it got to the sentencing. And so everything you said is absolutely correct. Smart guy, parents, privileged. He meets this woman, Caroline Ellison, who becomes his girlfriend. She's also another daughter of 2 like MIT professors. So they meet at Jane Street Capital, a trading firm. And so then they start essentially this Alameda Research. It's a quantitative crypto trading fund. And they realize that they need to build FTX, which is a crypto exchange, to support that trading business. And so with an exchange, what happens is you're buying, let's say we'll just use Bitcoin, for example, you're buying and selling Bitcoin. They make money off transaction fees. And then you essentially keep your money on the exchange, right? So you buy Bitcoin, usually you might keep it on FTX. So if you have a dollar of Bitcoin on FTX, you should be able to liquidate a dollar of Bitcoin. There should never be an issue around liquidity. What ended up happening is that these guys, FTX, created their own token called FTT. And it was found out through CZ. Well, it was actually a CoinDesk, which is a website. CoinDesk is a crypto news site that reported that FTX has a poor balance sheet. The assets held by Alameda Research, the firm, consisted mostly of FTT, this token that they created that essentially followed.
So instead of holding the underlying coins that their people who were on the exchange were buying or thought they were buying, they would transfer it into FTT.
Yeah, so they were holding FTT. What they were doing was that they were taking the money on FTX, which is customers put their money on the exchange. They were illegally taking those deposits and using them to kind of like deal with their losses on their trading company and to essentially pump up these prices. So they were taking the money from the exchange and using it for their trading fund. And then when CZ found this out, he called it out on Twitter and it just blew up, right? And so everyone was like, this balance sheet looks weird. And then, you know, CZ from Binance said, I'm pulling my money out. I'm selling. We're not holding FTT anymore, which caused the crash of the token. And so then everyone was like, let's sell the token. The token crashed. Anyone who tried to get their money off the exchange, it turned out that they didn't have the money. There wasn't enough money for people to liquidate,
process the withdrawals,
which means that they've moved the money or they've used the money illegally somewhere else because so that should never happen. And that just caused this, like, essentially a snowball effect that ended up crashing the entire industry.
So November 2022 is when this happened. And if you remember, that was when Bitcoin was like, it had gone to like 71,000 and then it crashed to, I think it went as low as 16 in the beginning of 2023. And so it was like a crypto winter triggered by the FTX scandal. And so fast forward to November of last year, he was charged.
One more thing I just want to add. It also affected a bunch of other crypto companies that other customers were using that kept their crypto on FTX. So all those companies, like people have heard of like Celsius or BlockFi, they also went bankrupt. So it just was just like, it was way more than just, you know, it was insane.
Right,
how
because
many people
FTF made itself into an infrastructure piece within crypto because a lot of other exchanges were holding FTT.
Exactly. But the other thing is to remember that if you are somewhat knowledgeable, like from a finance point of view, you don't normally put you should never keep your money on an exchange because the risk is always the exchange could blow up and you'd lose all your money. So a lot of people just really did trust SBF and the platform and they just, it blew. I think smart people kept their money offshore. Essentially, they kept them in these cold wallets and they didn't get it.
I thought you said exchanges weren't supposed to have liquidity issues.
They're not supposed to have liquidity issues, but what you would do is that you could keep it on the exchange or you put it into a storage on the exchange where they essentially, it's like hot versus cold where people couldn't hack it. But a lot of people say, you know, don't ever keep your money on the exchange in case there's a hacking issue. And so, but yes, there should never be a liquidity. Like if I had $100 on FTX at any point, I should be able to take $100 out. In this case, if I wanted to take $100 out and they said, sorry, we can only give you a dollar. That means like they took the deposits and they moved it elsewhere to use and lost that money.
Right. And this used to happen. Potentially there's this risk that this would happen, even not limited to crypto, in like fiat currency and banks. And so the FDIC now insures banks up to 250,000 because this actually something not exactly the same, but this happened to Silicon Valley Bank. So the government ended up stepping in and making sure that everyone was whole. But in FTX right now, what's happened is they've lost 11 billion. People who had deposits, the customers have lost 8 billion. Investors have lost 1.7 billion. And the lenders have lost $1.3 billion. So in November of 2023, SBF, who had been really evasive and was claiming that, you know, first he was in the Bahamas, then he was extradited. He got convicted of 7 felonies in November of 2023. And then he was sentenced last week by Judge Kaplan in SDNY to 25 years and ordered to repay the $11 billion that were lost. And throughout the process of the trial, he has not shown remorse. He has not admitted that he did anything wrong. He's been evasive. He's been lying. He's been well-coached, again, because his parents are Stanford law professors and they don't want to see him suffer. And frankly, they benefited immensely from this.
Part of the problem.
They got a $16 million house in the Bahamas. They got a $10 million payout from him. They, you know, fly on private jets and stay in $1,200 night hotels. And they're really, you know, on law professor salaries. They're not supposed to be making that kind of money, but they did through their sons.
Yeah, and it's also like just like the privilege of them sitting there and being like, well, no, he's, you know, like, look, this guy committed. I mean, there's so many people that not only lost their money, but going back to that effective altruism, he grew up around this idea that, you know, people in privilege and him and also Caroline Ellison, who is his girlfriend, they grew up around this idea that like, with privilege, you should be able to, you know, do well for the world. So it was almost that they were using like, well, whatever it takes to make money so that we can like save the world. But come on, man, you don't do that like illegally. I mean,
yeah, but you can't steal money to be altruistic.
Yeah, exactly. You can't steal money. It's like, who do these kids think they are? And yeah, the arrogance, man. Look, you're a kid who's really powerful. I mean, they're smart kids. You're going to become, you know, ego always takes a role here. I mean, there are stories about when this guy was raising money for FTX from VCs that he would be playing video games while giving the pitch. And of course, like VCs are like, oh my God, this kid's a genius. Here's my money. You know, cause it's like, he's this odd kid who's a genius. I know a crypto fund that's very well known, very well respected. They had a meeting during the time that FTX was raising money. And then they said, if you want to invest in us, this is the price, but it was something like every day the price will go up. And that created a lot of FOMO for a lot of folks. But for this gentleman, he said that that was the moment they knew they didn't want to be in business with this guy. Cause a lot of, you know, VC investing is 10-year relationships. And he's like, why would I want to be in business with a guy who's like moving the needle on us on a daily basis? So he purposely stayed away from FTX and any other investment that FTX touched. And so they weren't harmed. You know, they had minimal exposure, but this guy touched a lot of folks. Look, when you're popular and you have money, to your point, celebrities, I mean, they were very good at building brands, Super Bowl ads.
It was probably easy for them to just say whatever they wanted because they didn't have that instinct that's like, oh man, I should be telling the truth. Or they didn't have like any moral qualms about that. Maybe they truly believed that what they were doing was for the greater good. And I think like it does come back to the parents for me on this because,
agreed,
you know, his parents, arguably, you know, Harvard educated, Yale law, Stanford law professors, like they probably should have been like, bro, do you really want to break all these laws and do this? Like, play within the rules, I guess.
Elitist. Whether they're liberal or conservative, in this case, they're liberal, like elitist, liberal with their certain views, their certain privilege, whatever it might be. I think that we need, you know, examples need to be set that, like, you can't do this kind of stuff, you know? And, like, I think everyone involved should be affected by it.
So, his dad wrote a letter to the judge saying that whatever he did, his actions don't justify him being incarcerated for more than the minimum. And it's like,
it's insane.
They just, yeah.
It's insane. I can't imagine what those parents
are going
through.
So some peon suffered. Who cares?
Like those parents, I mean, I don't know anyone who'd want to be around those parents. So at this point, it's like, yeah, I mean, props to them for wanting to protect their son.
Well, apparently they're still having like dinner parties. The friends that they had before are still friends with them now. Like they have the $20 million house in the Bahamas. They're for now. I mean, history may remember them as villains,
yeah,
and they may, you know, have sullied their names, but that's really the only consequence that they look to be faced. I mean, they are technically, I guess, being sued by FTX because FTX went into bankruptcy, so it has different people running it now, and they're trying to undo what Sam did, and they're trying to claw back funds. But his parents have been steadfast that they didn't do anything wrong. They had no fiduciary duty to FTX.
And yeah, just another one of those stories. So let's see. You know, I think
Happy Easter.
It seems that, you know, crypto right now is on a new wave. There seems to be like a new bit of a bullish movement happening. But I'll tell you what, man, no one forgets that what happens. Like it's like one, and that's the problem with industries like that. Like, you know, one company, one person with so much power, one company with so much power to be able to unravel an entire industry and like affect so many people. Like we really need to start doing.
Well, that's why markets are regulated, right?
Yeah, like, markets are exactly. Exactly. That's exactly right. And look, Wall Street's learned this. Like after 2008, they had to put many, many new guardrails in place so that these things wouldn't happen. Even after the Silicon Valley Bank thing that happened, we didn't think that would ever happen. So new guardrails are put in place. So hopefully we just continue to learn from this stuff.
Well, that is, you know, big picture, that is how things evolve, right? Like new industries come in, they're not regulated because industry is usually a step ahead of regulation. Some people lose money, they get caught up, some people make money. And then regulation catches up, and like whatever makes crypto revolutionary is not necessarily going to change. It can still be a revolutionary form of storing value, of having transactions, having things on the blockchain. That could still be there. There's going to be crooks that may use that opportunistically, and that will decrease, and markets will get more efficient, and markets will get more intelligent, and investors will get more intelligent as examples like these happen. But you know, it does seem like if investors, customers, and lenders are out $11 billion, that's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? So where did the money go? How does it get clawed back? That's what I'm curious to see. And to the extent people have benefited, and you know, that money got transferred to their accounts, I feel like there should be some justice there.
100%. I mean, the last thing, the analogy I'll give is like, if I was a bank and you gave me $10 and I took that $10 and I went to Vegas and I gambled it and I lost it, and then I got another deposit to give me, you know, it's like, yeah, that shouldn't happen. I should go to jail for that, and I should pay you back your $10. That is as simple as that. So good breakdown as always. You know, we'll keep people posted. There's a bunch of things we've been talking about recently that are ongoing. And so it'll be exciting to update folks as we continue to get more news about it. But good show this week, Paul.
Thanks, man.
Good luck to Duke.
Thank you. See you guys next week.
That's our show for this week, folks. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you choose to listen. Follow us on Instagram, TikTok, at Better Call Paul, the podcast. Follow me on X at Mesh Lakhani. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.
Better Call Paul is produced and edited by Valentino Rivera and assistant producer Lisa Sanders.